Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
I believe united we stand, and we have common ground to find, and we're going to find it. We're not even going to
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, a look at this week in the Capitol. First, with I Was There, testimony on the tragic number of suicides by Wisconsin law enforcement officers. Central Wisconsin legislators scrap over a Portage County bill. Emergency detentions consume law enforcement resources. And an Oshkosh public hearing on a controversial free speech bill. With I Was There.
There are some seniors, you know, they're making the choice. They're cutting their medication in half, or they're going to have to skip this bill to make sure that they can pay for their meds the next month. And that's not fair to the people who built this state, who made Wisconsin in part what it is today. So we are calling on the president to get behind what the Democrats are proposing in Congress and move forward and lower the cost of prescription drugs to our senior citizens.
We, as a profession in law enforcement, in 2018 actually surpassed the number of officers killed in the line of duty with officers lost through suicide. That's significant. We just feel that this legislation will help get us on that road, takes us away from a decision that was made in 1974.
Any bill that I've ever written, I write for my constituents. I don't go to the governor to ask for approval to write a bill. I've never done that. I won't do that. My constituents have more importance to me. I will work through the legislative process. And hopefully we garner bipartisan votes on this bill in committee and on the floor, that the governor would hold to his word that if a bipartisan bill comes to his desk, that it would be signed into law.
With all due respect, it's not bipartisan, and you chose to make it that way. That's why I'm asking.
You're choosing to make it that way right now with the comments you're making.
We have an epidemic in the state of Wisconsin with emergency detentions. I will tell you that in as far as law enforcement goes, my opinion, and I think the opinion of many law enforcement executives, is that emergency detentions by far take up the most time of any incident that we deal with on a daily basis.
The goal of this bill is not to limit any speech protected under the Constitution, but rather protect those who have differing opinions. With this bill, we can affirm that the ability to engage in the exchange of ideas without the fear of intimidation.
Fear of intimidation. And I appreciate you mentioning that, because this bill, if it were passed and signed into law, which I don't believe it would be, but if it were, would almost certainly create that fear of intimidation for those lawfully exercising their First Amendment rights.
General Donald Dunbar has headed the Wisconsin Air Force National Guard since 2007. He's also headed the Emergency Management Department. This week he was asked and resigned. He was asked to resign by the governor. He'll be gone by the end of the year. Did you see this one coming before we get into the federal report, JR?
As soon as you start talking about these problems and calls for change, calls for change means a shakeup in leadership. So the fact that he resigned, I think that was a surprise because of the depth of the problem with this. But a year ago, 2 years ago, if you have asked me or many people, like, if things have screwed up with the National Guard, I don't think people knew that was about that problem. It's some great reporting that kind of exposed this issue and brought it to light.
Right. Let's go through some of the findings in the federal report. The feds found that Wisconsin Guard had violated federal rules requiring that allegations of sex harassment or assault be investigated by outside agencies. Only 5 of 32 Guard victim advocates were properly trained. General Dunbar did not track or report assault or harassment statistics. Another finding in that was troubling, JR, is there's an allegation that some of our Guard investigators kind of misrepresented themselves as being from an outside agency.
Now, they created an entirely separate methodology for investigating allegations of harassment and assault outside the norm. Like, that's what's kind of mind-boggling to people I talk to, is that here's what you're supposed to do. They created this internal operation to review these claims and basically botched it. I think there was one report this past week that a federal investigator called it a train wreck, essentially, what they were doing. It boggles the mind that you would do something like that with something so sensitive.
And here's someone who's the longest-serving head of a guard in the nation. Let's look at the governor's reaction to the governor's statement. I ordered the guard to implement top-to-bottom changes to ensure a safe workplace, free of sexual assault and harassment, and the fear soldiers might face retaliation for reporting sexual assault or harassment. The governor made it clear. I asked for the resignation at the end of the month. Let's look at Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald's statement. Now, he's a retired Army Reserve Lieutenant Colonel, so he has a lot of experience with the military. Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald, my primary concern has been justice and support for victims. It is now the duty of the governor and new leadership of the Guard to implement the recommended reforms. Fixing this will not happen overnight. And finally, U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin, a Democrat, said, Wisconsin National Guard service members deserve leadership of unmatched integrity and a work environment free of sexual assault, harassment, and the fear of retaliation. They have received neither. What are you hearing going forth? There's an interim general now leading the Guard. Any fallout?
There's going to be a regular check-in, basically, with the governor on the progress on implementing these changes. So that'll be something to watch. But basically, trying to overhaul the entire process.
The governor wants what he said are major changes implemented by September 1.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Second topic. The Marquette University poll says the don't impeach sentiment, which they measured both in November and December, is still pretty high. Let's look at those numbers. Don't impeach. Should Congress impeach the President Trump? The December findings, 40% yes, 52% no. Very minor change, a margin of error change from November. The same 40% yes, 53% no. I think you and I wondered when we talked about this the last time whether this was an anomaly, but two straight polls showing a majority of Wisconsin residents who answered the poll don't impeach.
Yeah, impeach and remove. So that's
you.
Key part of that.
Thank you.
What Charles Franklin, poll director, talked about in the presentation on Thursday was that people are dug in. Remember, the poll in November went in the field just before or just as testimony began for the House Intelligence Committee.
Yes.
This poll went in the field after that it concluded and just as it was going to the Judiciary Committee. So we wondered a month ago, okay, once people hear the entire allegations, like hear an airing of these things, would it change minds? And the answer is no.
The answer is no.
And Franklin's saying people are dug in. I mean, there's just a... Nothing is changing people's minds. They made up their made their decision about this at this point. So away we go. Now, the question I have going forward is, okay, we're going to, I think today they voted on articles of impeachment in the Judiciary Committee.
They voted on that. And I want to say that only Republican Congressman Jim Sensenbrenner is the only Wisconsin member of the U.S. House on that Judiciary Committee. And Congressman Sensenbrenner, as you said just this morning, voted against the two articles of impeachment.
So now we go to the full House. What's Ron Kind going to do? The reason I bring up Ron Kind is Donald Trump won his district in 2016.
I think you've said by what, 12%, 14%?
It was 4.5% that he won, but Kind didn't have an opponent in 2016, won election overwhelmingly in 2018. Republicans nationally keep targeting him because of that dynamic of what happened in 16. But to date, we have no name opponent running against Ron Kind, so it raises doubts to people I talk to about how serious the chances of Republicans to beat him. Still, you know, if you're a pro-Trump district and you're supporting impeachment, it could put you in a little bit difficult situation, so watch that.
But just a minute on Kind. He has issued two past statements at least saying he does, indicating, signaling that he plans to vote for the articles of impeachment, correct?
Plays up all the time. He's a former prosecutor.
Yes.
Notes that he's looking at this. We go to the U.S. Senate, and then there's going to be the vote there, the trial. The question then becomes, okay, 10 months from now, what are we talking about? Are we talking about impeachment in October of 2020? I have no clue. The numbers now show this split or this sentiment against impeaching or moving. I don't know if this is going to be the dominant issue between now and next November.
Right.
Remember, as we sat here in end of 2017,
yeah.
Did you predict protection for preexisting conditions would be the dominant issue in the 2018 elections?
No.
People I talked to didn't. So it's hard to know that right now as you sit here, this is going to dictate what's going to happen in the presidential race.
Right. Okay, let's look at one other number from the Marquette University poll. I was intrigued, J.R., Charles Franklin, the pollster, asked Wisconsin Democrats, what do you think of five top presidential candidates? Sanders and Biden tied at 68%. Biden had a little bit fewer unfavorables. Warren, 59% favorable, 17% unfavorable. Buttigieg, 47% favorable, 10% un. And then Mr. Bloomberg, 23% favorable, 32% unfavorable. We'll probably be talking about him later. Any surprises in these top five?
No, but I'd like to point out with Mayor Pete, he's now moved into the top tier. When asked about your first choice, you know, among Democrats, he's right there. Like, it's Biden, Sanders, Warren, and Mayor Pete. The margin of error in that question is about 6.3 percentage points. So you're talking, it's, they're all kind of tightly packed, speaking like statistically. The question I have is this the churn of a normal presidential primary where you have like your moment in the sun? Mm-hmm. Remember Senator Kamala Harris when she challenged Biden about busing in a debate sometime last summer?
I think it was the first debate.
Yeah. She all of a sudden got this big explosion of attention, then faded. Elizabeth Warren, she had this big explosion of attention. Now, I mean, there were predictions a month or two ago that she was inevitable as a Democratic nominee, right?
Right.
Also, now she's stalled. There's stories this week about how she's trying to retool her message in her campaign. So for Mayor Pete, is this like that moment in the sun where, okay, you get your shot, you then get the scrutiny of being like the flavor of the week. Do you go from being that flavor to being a player, right? That's the question about him. And oh, by the way, in that, if you look at the crosstabs for Democrats, he's got pretty good number, like 40 favorable, unfavorable for among Democrats.
Yeah,
it's 40 favorable, 8 unfavorable.
Right.
Why I bring that up is there are so many people who don't have an opinion of him. That means there's room for growth. So can he break into that, like break past that? That okay, here's my moment to staying power in that primary.
Okay, but let's look at Sanders versus Biden because Sanders won the last mm-hmm. Democratic presidential primary. Now they're both tied at 68 favorables. Sanders unfavorable 7 percentage points higher. Significant or we shouldn't punditize on this.
You know, the thing about this whole thing is we are in April for our primary.
Yes.
We're going through Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, and Nevada. The reason I bring that up is that if, you know, Biden, like, he's now being talked about nationally, of, oh, all of a sudden he's, like, in the top of the polls in Iowa and New Hampshire again, whereas he'd kind of, like, have this, you know, kind of this ebb, right? Well, now it's like, well, if he wins Iowa and New Hampshire, because he's been banking on South Carolina and I think Nevada to be like, you know, okay, I'll do just okay in these first two states, but then kind of hit my spot. If he does well in Iowa and New Hampshire and momentum builds for somebody like that, it could be in the bag by Wisconsin. But I would never predict that because right. all these polls are trying to figure out
we are not
primary
in prediction business.
And caucus votes. Yeah. But yeah, so I guess the point is we're a long way from knowing what role we're going to play and who's really the players in that primary come April.
Right. Okay, new topic. I was surprised when you reported this week that the State Republican Party has kept open and reserved the option of holding its own presidential primary on April 7th. Now, there's two announced candidates. It used to be former Governor Sanford, but he dropped out. Bill Wald, former governor of Massachusetts, and Joe Walsh, former Illinois congressman. Talk to me about the potential significance of this before we look at some other parts of this discussion.
So it's kind of a multi-step process. There was a deadline this past week for if you were a party that got at least 10% of the ballot in the previous gubernatorial election, you get to have a presidential primary in Wisconsin. All right, there are two parties that qualify, Republicans and Democrats. They had a deadline to say, okay, Election Commission, we want to have a primary. Of course, Dems said yes, right, because they have like a dozen, 15 people still running. For Republicans, it's been a bigger question because nationally we've seen some states cancel their primaries right. saying it doesn't make any sense, Trump's going to win, so what's the point? Now, there's a flip side of that, a criticism that Republicans sometimes are trying to shield Donald Trump from the possibility of an embarrassing showing. Like, let's go back to 1992 when Pat Buchanan ran probably strong against George Bush, the first George Bush, I believe in Iowa, if I remember correctly, mm-hmm. that sent shockwaves, right? Oh, is this guy strong enough to win re-election, all that kind of stuff. There's that possibility of an embarrassing showing for Trump. Now, in Wisconsin, if you look at the numbers in Marquette poll, he's pretty solid with Republicans. You're not seeing signs of a problem. So, yes, we're going to have a primary. Now, January 7th, I believe it is, there's going to be a meeting of this commission, which is made up of, again, the parties that qualify,
yes.
Republican Democrats, who determines who's on the ballot. Represent from both parties, they'll say, here are the people we want. And typically, if Republicans say, we want these people, Dems are okay. They don't add, you know, oh, you should add this guy, right? Why is that important? Because if you don't get named to the ballot as part of that process, you then have to collect 8,000 signatures between in a three-week period.
Yes.
Okay. Why is that difficult? For a normal statewide election, you have 6 weeks to gather 2,000 signatures. On top of being 8,000 at minimum, it has to be a minimum of 1,000 for each congressional district to get on the ballot. Now, tell me how these guys, Weld and Walsh, what kind of operations they have nationally in Wisconsin to get enough people to go out and gather that many signatures in a three-week period. Pretty high bar to cross.
Okay, but JR, there's no context here linking the state Republican Party's decision to hold a primary and the potential impeachment vote, both in the House and the Senate. You don't see any dots to connect there?
No.
You don't?
No, not at all. This is all about whether it makes sense. And then there's a subtext here a little bit of, remember, on that April ballot, there's going to be the state Supreme Court race.
Yes.
There is an idea being kicked around of does it make sense to have a primary because you would draw out more Republican voters because Trump would be on the ballot, right? If I don't know that Walsh or Weld are going to pose any threat to Donald Trump in Wisconsin, but if you have any mechanism to get more people out on the Republican side, it helps Daniel Kelly. Because right now, again, if there's still an active primary come April for the Democrats, you have the potential for more than a million people voting that primary for the Democrats. Well, they're likely going to vote for the progressive candidate for Supreme Court while they're there, or at least most of them would. Go back and look at 2019, I'm sorry, the Supreme Court race, and there was a surge of support for Brian Hagedorn, the conservative. He got 606,000 votes. So you need to figure out ways to get from 606,000 to a million to help Kelly and improve his chances for retaining that seat.
Okay, but just a P.S. You and I both covered the state Republican convention. Mm-hmm. Before that convention, I sent off an email to the Bill Weld,
Weld
campaign, thanks for the correction, saying if you're going to have a representative at the Republican state convention, Wisconsin, I would like to interview she or he. Never got a response. Do you see any signs that either Weld or Walsh have any support in Wisconsin?
Not that I've seen. That's the other consideration for Republicans is, do they have an actual campaign? And what I was told when I asked was, we will wait and see if there is a viable candidate, if they have viable candidacies to put them on the ballot. So they have a couple of weeks left to prove that in Wisconsin. It's not clear they have it.
Okay, and just a final P.S., as you alluded to, the Presidential Selection Committee meets January 7th, and they pretty much honor whoever the parties want.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yep.
Okay. 1 week ago, the Transportation Projects Commission had its first meeting in 5 years, and let's listen to how Transportation Secretary-Designee Craig Thompson introduced the role of that panel and why it's back after 5 years. Please.
This commission is charged with reviewing and making recommendations on what are known as the major highway improvement projects. While these projects are exceedingly important, that's the impetus for this commission, they are also only one component of our transportation budget. I fully expect that we will be bringing studies for future projects to you for your consideration, as well as projects for enumeration. It's imperative in order to make the best use of the citizens' tax dollars that we are deliberative and look at what the emerging needs are, prioritize how we stage the projects to achieve the greatest value, and plan for how they can be funded.
Let's you and I talk about many years ago when the Transportation Projects Commission was created. It's supposed to be kind of a first step in recognizing major costly highway projects and recommending, let's put them in the funding pipeline. And it recommends to the governor and the legislature, but it's had kind of a convoluted history. Is that a fair way?
I think when they first announced this meeting, I wrote that commission's met six times in the last 19 years or something like that.
Okay. But in his charge, he said, you're valid, and we're going to try to bring some of our major highway project recommendations back to you to begin the process. So how significant was their first meeting in 5 years?
I think it's part of the start of the conversation again, a little more symbolic of, okay, we're going to include you guys in this conversation going forward. Let's also be honest. The last 8 years under Governor Walker, we weren't doing a lot of big projects. He was trying to, like, not raise taxes or fees, so that was part of what was going on with that. The conclusion of the commission from Friday was last week, there were, like, three projects. Hey, not time to do them, basically.
Right.
So they didn't really put anything in the pipeline.
Officially unlisted them, delisted them?
Yeah, I guess in some way. But what I'm looking for is Craig Thompson told me when they announced this commission that, look, you know, there's a big to-do in the Capitol not that long ago because all these projects have been doing for a long time, the costs exploded.
Yes.
And there's all these increases, and it took people so surprised. He said, look, if we have this commission going, we've had conversations and updates, and lawmakers are on that commission, they could have asked questions on the way and said, hey, what's going on here? It would have less of a shock to the system of, oh, there's this, this, and this going on. So that might be part of what's going on here.
But the bottom line here is why they haven't met in 5 years is because we've had a shortfall in we'd wanted to do X number of roads, and we haven't had enough money, a five-year shortfall.
Well, think of the big projects being done. I-90 right now, that was put in place by Governor Doyle, first announced that, 07, 08, somewhere around there, maybe later. 94, remember we moved 94 off the table, finishing it back a decade or so ago. It's back on right now because of Foxconn, right?
Well, sure. We've had 94 Milwaukee to Racine for Foxconn, but if you go back a long ways, we've rebuilt the Marquette Interchange. We've rebuilt the east-west and the zoo.
Rather than the east-west, yeah, we did the zoo. And the last big project they enumerated in the last budget was I-41 up between Green Bay and Appleton, somewhere in there. So
yeah.
We haven't been really doing a lot of projects, and they've been coming through a different system, getting into the pipeline.
Okay, just a final reminder, as you alluded to, who's on the commission? You have the governor, you have 10 lawmakers, and you have 3 private citizens. And, Jarrett, let's end it this way. Nobody is pretending that, yes, I think we put an additional $460 million more into our state highway projects, but nobody is saying that that's a long-term permanent solution, correct?
No.
To transportation funding.
No. We have east-west in Milwaukee area, which is 94 between the zoo and the Marquette. We have I-43, I believe is one of the projects that people have talked about, 894 around Milwaukee. It goes on and on and on.
And those are all southern Wisconsin projects.
Those are all mega projects.
Mega projects, and yeah. But raising the concerns about, from northern legislators, where is our road money?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's go to your stock picks. Rising.
All right, so innovation centers. So, look, the Brookings Institution.
That's a boring term.
I know.
Okay.
The Brookings Institution is calling for $10 billion annually to be invested in regional growth centers. All right, now, just because some think tank calls for a bunch of money is not like a big deal, right? Because there's no guarantee of this. But it's a nice feather in the cap for Milwaukee and Madison because this group identified like 35 places, based in the heartland.
Brookings did.
That would be.
Big,
nice
huge
targets,
national think tank.
Good place to invest this money in.
Yeah.
Madison was number one, the 35, Milwaukee 17, based on things like patents, STEM degrees, those kind of things. So a little, you know, little plug for Madison and Milwaukee for doing well as potential investment centers for innovation.
Mixed.
Medical marijuana. So it's interesting this week, had a kind of a development in that we had our first Republican-only authored bill on medical marijuana.
I think that's very important. And the sponsors were Senator Kathy Bernier and Representative Mary Felskowski, who's a member of Assembly Leadership. But it's your pick, so I'm going to let you talk about it.
So we had a bill a couple months ago. Basically, it was introduced mostly by Democrats with GOP Senator Pat Testin on it and 3 Assembly Republicans. That bill has gotten no public hearing, has gone nowhere. This one is noteworthy because, again, it's a Republican bill. When I asked about this week, they said it was a sign of the progress. The conversation is evolving. So 5 years ago, this is only Democrats talking about this, right?
Yeah.
We've seen referendums out in the state. People are behind it. The Marquette poll shows people support it. So there's a growing sense of support among rank-and-file lawmakers for it. Here are the issues, though. Number one, Senator William Scott Fitzgerald said he does not support this whatsoever.
He is still a no, and he says his caucus is a no. Excuse me.
Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, who's open to medical marijuana, said he's basically noncommittal about this bill, said it's not a consensus in our caucus. And that's the key thing. There's a rule of thumb we talked about before in both Republican caucuses of you want to have the vote you need to pass any bill from your caucus alone before you go to the floor. So you don't go with 12 Republicans and 5 Dems to pass a bill. It's 17 Republicans in the Senate, period, for almost everything. Until you get to that mark, it's not going to move. In the Assembly, I'm not sure there are 50 Republican votes, but there's a growing number of Republicans who would vote for this. One of the issues I heard from people was, you know, Voss is not going to take this to the floor, no one will pass the Senate because it is so politically popular, you could put some members in a difficult position to vote for it. So the big thing is the conversation is evolving. It's becoming more of a question of when, not if, we're going to see this in Wisconsin. We're now an island with Minnesota, Illinois, Michigan that have legalized either medical marijuana or recreational marijuana.
Right. Okay, but you saw the press releases from Senator Erpenbach, Democratic Rep Taylor, Democratic Rep Sargent. Maybe this is a good first step, but it's not where we need to be. So why don't they just accept the fact that Felskowski, who said in an interview with Channel 3, we'd like to get at least a public hearing on our bill. So I agree with you. I think it's a major development. I applaud your mixed. Okay. Falling.
Mike Bloomberg. So, look, of all the Democrats that were in the Marquette poll, they asked, like, favorable, unfavorable, you know, do you like this guy of Democrats? He's the only Democrat that Democrats don't really like that much. So he's upside down.
Okay, let's talk about that upside down. His numbers were, you remember, got to find it. Oh, here we are. 23% up, 32%. That's your upside down.
Here's the issue. Bloomberg is a former Republican, all right? He won some fans among Democrats because he's been big about gun control issues. But they also remember, like, here's a guy who's a billionaire coming in trying to buy the, in their minds, trying to buy the nomination.
$53 billion, and what about stop and frisk? I'm sorry, these are your picks.
No, that's one of the issues that comes up.
He apologized for stop and frisk.
So
stop
here
and
you,
frisk.
And if you look at the Marquette numbers, between Biden, Sanders, Warren, and Buttigieg, they're at like 73% of the vote among Democrats on those four. That's not the sign of an electorate going, we don't like our picks. They're kind of like focusing on four. So where is Bloomberg's lane? And if Democrats don't like you, you don't have a lane. Now, he has money. He's airing ads in Wisconsin already.
You and I are watching his ads or so scrolling through them.
There is a way. There is maybe a way, but right now it's not breaking through so far.
Okay. That's very interesting. Okay, we need to talk about next week because let me get this right. There's several important things happen. On Tuesday, a Senate committee will consider a bill that would penalize local governments who protect immigrants here illegally, and that bill would make a local government liable for damages caused by any illegal alien who is here. On Wednesday, the Joint Committee on Employment Relations will consider the 2% pay raises funded in the budget and consider Governor Evers' recommendation that state government pay a minimum of $15 per hour by January 2021. Any thoughts on how that's going to shake out?
Also note that the state troopers have a contract up for that committee that would boost their pay by 21.3%. That's the lift. 4 years ago.
What are they arguing? How many years without a raise?
4 years ago, they had a boost of 6% after the committee rejected a 16% increase for them back then. So it's going to be a tough lift, I think, for the committee.
Thursday, the governor's climate change task force meets, and next week I'm scheduled to do year-end interviews with Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, Assembly Democratic Leader Gordon Hintz. And a final reminder, please go to wisci.org and vote for our top stories of 2019. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for December 13th.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.